We are less than 1 year away from the big celebration of America at 250. On July 4th, 2026, the nation will honor the 250th birthday of the Declaration of Independence, our nation's birth certificate. Now, some secularists either downplay our history or worse, only highlight the bad stuff. But historian Jane Hampton Cook is doing her part to help Americans rediscover our true history and how exciting it is. Jane Hampton Cook has worked in the White House and has written books on American history for adults and children. And she's going to join us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Jane, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it seems like maybe there's a beginning of a renewal of interest in American history. I mean, I even heard that Ken Burns is interested in the possibility of, you know, releasing some new programs related to the birth of America.
That is amazing. That would be great. You know, and I think what's exciting about the times that we live in is that we have more access to what the founders' writings were all about because we can see them online. They've been digitized. On the National Archives has a database of the documents and the writings. And I think that's what makes it exciting is that we could actually see and learn more about George Washington than people could read his writings, you know, 200 years ago. They didn't have access to all of it. And now we do. So I think that's kind of a cool thing.
I think you're absolutely right. Okay, I went on your website and I saw little, different articles about things. And I thought, well, this would be fun to just go ahead and ask you about some of these points that maybe the average American is not familiar with. So let's talk about Abigail Adams and the Spirit of Liberty. And we might even back up and say, well, what about John Adams and Abigail Adams and the Spirit of Liberty?
Well, you know, John and Abigail Adams were ready to declare independence. A lot earlier. They were ready in 1775, and they really were a great team. They really respected each other's intellect, and I think they realized that their neighbors weren't ready to declare independence, but they didn't stop trying, and they realized a year later everyone was ready. If they were going to be ready, they were ready in 1776. And the Spirit of Liberty is what Abigail described. She saw it in men of all degrees, you know, all classes, male and female. Everybody was talking about liberty and freedom and separating from England by the time you get to the spring of 1776. And that's why she wrote about the Spirit of Liberty was really for everyone. And she was trying to let a London bookseller know about the plight of America, that it was really freedom was sought after by everyone.
Now, John Adams had a cousin, Samuel Adams, and I think Samuel Adams got interested in this even before John did. Can you tell us about Samuel?
Yes, so you're right. Samuel Adams was really thinking about all of this probably before anyone else. I mean, that's one reason why he's called the father of the American Revolution or the firebrand of the Revolution. And he was an editor of a newspaper, and he also helped organize the Sons of Liberty, who were the kind of the first wave of people who protested the king's taxes and things like that. But he was also a very strong Christian, and he wrote in 1772, so we're, 4 years out from the Declaration, he said, "The right to freedom being the gift of the Almighty, the rights of the colonists as Christians may be best understood by reading and carefully studying the institutions of the great lawgiver and the head of the Christian church." And so he saw this as all together, you know, that his religious beliefs, his beliefs in the way government should work as an Englishman, that it was all together in his mind, that freedom was natural because it was a gift from God. And so that was his mindset. And he realized that big ocean in between America and England was put there by God on purpose.
Yeah, and by the way, just one last observation about Samuel Adams. I read in one book about him, and I've read different biographies just in the last couple of years, And this one book concluded and said, you know, in a real sense, you could say that the Declaration of Independence was the culmination of Samuel Adams' life work. I thought, wow, what a, well, that's an incredible statement. Incredible. Okay. The U.S. Navy, was founded in 1775, and, that was part of the work of, John Adams, I believe. And, any comments about that? Cause this is the 250th anniversary of that, you know, amazing, milestone.
Well, you know, John Adams certainly recognized the need for a Navy before a lot of people thought about it. And that is partially because he lived in a shipping town, right? Ships came in and out of Boston Harbor. It was very, very integral to their commerce, but also their protection. And when he realized that these British ships were no longer going to be our military ships were no longer going to be protecting America, that the Americans themselves needed to build their own ships. Create their own Navy. And so he was definitely really focused on that aspect of being ready, you know, to defend ourselves.
All right. America's first political cartoon. That shows up on your website.
Yes. So the Join, Free, or Die snake graphic, for lack of a better word, it's a snake that's cut into segments based on the different colonies, and their initials are around those segments. And that was actually first created by Benjamin Franklin in the 1750s. I think it was 1754. And he created that to help people understand that the colonies at that time needed to join together and fight with the British in the French and Indian War, as historians have called that conflict. And what is really fascinating to me is that there's an article, a newspaper article, that's right next to this graphic that's printed in the paper. And the article is all about Major George Washington, who had been in the West where the boundaries were, and he'd seen the French cross into English territory and build forts. So even that snake graphic is also tied to George Washington, because he was the main character in the story that was going along with that graphic.
Wait a minute, 1754, it was in 1755, a year later then, that George Washington, as a young officer, was almost, could easily have been killed. All the other officers were either killed or wounded, including the leader of the expedition by, it was a battle that occurred near the Pittsburgh area, at the Monongahela River during that French and Indian War. And you're saying that George Washington was already acknowledged at least some way in a newspaper a year before that battle? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because he had gone there, in a year earlier, and, his journal about his excursion into the Ohio River Valley, is what it's called, you're right, near Pittsburgh. And that journal was published and distributed as a pamphlet, and excerpts of it were published in newspapers. So that is when George Washington became a household name, was even before that battle. And so when that battle occurred, people already knew the name of George Washington. So when he has this near-death experience on the battlefield, where he credits Providence for protecting him, even though he had four bullets go through his coat and two horses shot under him. I really think God was using George Washington and showing the American people of, you know, this strong hero that eventually, you know, led the revolution militarily 20 years later. But that all started in 1754 and 1755.
You know, when you mentioned pamphlets, this was a very literate culture. And I once got to spend an afternoon with the late Dr. Donald S. Lutz of the University of Houston, and did this long TV interview with him and so forth, but pumping him for all kinds of questions. And he said one of the remarks he made, many fascinating things, but he said, in those days, what was their mass media for all practical purposes? You know, they didn't have the internet. They didn't have, you know, the radio or TV or, you know, movies or whatever. But what they did have was sermons, and these things were written down and published in pamphlet form, and they were circulating up and down the coast. So when you talk about pamphlets, pamphlets were very important. And, you know, again, this was a very literate society. And I just thought, wow, that's fascinating. Is there anything you want to add to that?
Well, sure. So ministers would publish their best sermons. And so especially if one was really well received by their congregation, they would arrange to have that printed in these pamphlets. And that's why we know what those sermons were about, because so many sermons were published as part of, as you said, the mass media. And I know, you know, like the John Quincy Adams, he read sermons every day. So did, you know, it was part of his father's culture as well. And so that was a really important thing. And in fact, one of the sermons that was given in 1755, a month after George Washington's a close call on the battlefield, a minister named Samuel Davies predicted that Washington was saved for great service in the future to his country. And that was part of a sermon that was published. And so, again, you know, people are seeing, hey, ministers are really looking to this heroism and wondering, you know, why was George Washington's life saved on that battlefield?
Let me ask you a question. As you started to do your own research on America's history and, frankly, America's Christian roots, did you, after a while, just start to say, wait a minute, we keep hearing about the separation of church and state. We keep hearing even the idea that, well, the founders were, you know, deists for the most part or whatever, and religion wasn't important to them, maybe outwardly or officially or whatever. But in reality, it was more this, you know, the independent but not religious spirit that founded these things. And yet you're talking about, you know, sermons being like one of the major parts of the mass media of that day and all these other ways. Tell us about your own reaction as you did your own research into these things.
Well, you know, it's exciting, I think, to see the literature, the pamphlets from that era in the newspapers, because you do see that Christianity was very important to the culture. It was really integral into their way of life. And, you can't really, the separation of church and state, that is not really the way it was. It was mixed together a lot more. And then they knew that they would have some theological differences from denomination to denomination, but they also realized that they needed to value liberty, because this was the first country that was created where both Catholics and Protestants could live together safely. And that hadn't been the case in England, you know, in the 1500s during the reigns of Queen Elizabeth and others. And so it was part of them. And there's a quote from Samuel Adams, who after the signing of the Declaration, he said this: "We have this day restored the sovereign to whom all men ought to be obedient." So he's talking about God as sovereign, not the king, and that he reigns in heaven from the rising of the rising to the setting of the sun. Let his kingdom come. And so that's how Samuel Adams summed up, you know, the hope that the Declaration of Independence brought to the people in 1776, that it would be both a way to start a new government, but also to allow religion to flourish.
All right, we have about 1 minute left. Paul Revere.
Paul Revere was very heroic. He made that famous ride as part of the battles of Lexington and Concord to warn the colonists that they needed to go defend those towns. And so he was really the messenger, and he had done a lot of other message sending on horseback before this and after this happened. But he was volunteering, you know, to really help protect his fellow colonists in 1775.
Virginia and fireworks.
So Virginia was the first state to launch fireworks for the purpose of celebrating independence. The Virginians declared independence from England in May of 1776, and they celebrated with a parade and a fireworks show in Williamsburg. And that there was an article that was printed in 13 different newspapers about this event. And I think that gave the other colonies the idea that, yeah, celebrating with fireworks is a good thing. And so we see them, you know, in Philadelphia and in Boston following suit after the Virginians did it.
All right, and more fascinating details can be found at Jane's website, which is janecook.com. Jane, thanks, and all the best.
Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.